Hello, everyone, and welcome to NWR Connectivity episode 328. I'm your host, John Raridan, and I am joined, as I often am, by Neil Ronahan.
Hey, let's go. I heard the Nintendo Direct happened this week. Very excited to talk about Metroid and Bayonetta.
Yes, and all of your favorite third-party Nintendo games. Yeah, there was a Nintendo Direct.
It's a what now?
A what?
That's not what Samus Hunter said.
Samus Hunter very specifically said it wouldn't be this. Samus Hunter, if you're listening to this, which I know you're a huge fan, people would believe you more if you stopped being so specific. Like, if you had just stuck with, like, there's a Direct, then it could have been like, oh, wow, they were right. But you got real nitty-gritty, and that kind of just rules it out. Meanwhile, Silux Hunter over here, who... I don't know who this person is or where they came from, but they nailed this Direct perfectly. So I think we all know where we're going to switch our loyalties to as far as random Twitter Metroid leakers.
Random, nameless, faceless Twitter leakers. Yeah. Remember there was like that account on Reddit, like Brushy or something?
I mean, they're...
But there was one Reddit account that just like for a couple Directs in a row would just be like, here's the entire rundown. Mm-hmm. And it would just be like a list of games.
They're dead now.
Yeah. Now, I mean, I think they did get murdered because that's what I remember seeing, like Project Triangle Strategy. Is that like a Zelda thing? And I'm like, I should have known this was some terribly named Square Enix project.
Yeah, that's too weird to be a guess. Like,
yeah, I mean, like it's if you look at the list, the run of show for a couple directs, there was this Reddit account that just had everything accurate.
Yeah.
But I'm here for, I mean, Samus Hunter is probably, to my knowledge, at least as far as people active, you know, Marcus Sellers, if y'all want to come back. Maybe you are Samus Hunter. I have no idea. I honestly don't really care that much, except for Marcus Sellers told me that Madden was going to come to Switch like 4 years ago. Still waiting, buddy. Still waiting.
It's going to happen.
But yeah, the rumor scene, I do appreciate that the asinine Twitter nameless side of this has now evolved into like a performance art of some account named Silux Hunter that appears to be pretty on the money when they say things, just absolutely dunking on Samus Hunter.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's the combo of this would be great even if it were just a parody account, but the fact that they also got the Nintendo Direct right is amazing.
Yeah,
that's it's great. But yeah, so there was a third party partner Direct mini, which is too many qualifiers, and some people were a little upset about this because I think a lot of people were waiting for, you know, Nintendo's not E3 Direct. But going into this, like I had the thought, and Neil, I assume you were kind of in the same spot where there's kind of this element of like, look, I have a pretty good handle on what Nintendo's doing for the rest of the year, like, and they've been keeping things a lot closer to the chest as far as farther out things. I feel like if they had done a traditional Nintendo Direct, with assuming there was no Xenoblade Direct prior to this, they would have shown us like Xenoblade and like here's some more Splatoon.
And again, I mean, it could have been DLC. Like I think that it, you know, alternate reality where this isn't a partner Direct and it's basically the same amount of content with some Nintendo stuff worked into it. I think that and it's why I didn't assume like, oh, I mean, I did not know of the existence of the partner Direct until like last week sometime. Mm-hmm. I did assume for a while that I was like, it seems like Nintendo's probably gonna, you know, roll some stuff out in June like they usually do. That was a little bit more like knowing some of the announcements that they likely were going to have, you know, like Metroid Prime getting some kind of love, Zelda, if that was coming out. And I do think if Breath of the Wild 2 does not get delayed to 2023, we probably do have a big old fashioned, you know, Nintendo E3 Direct hootenanny.
Yeah.
And I think things probably changed because you could do a big blowout on Zelda, but I also don't think that's quite as necessary.
Well, and yes, save it for once there's an actual like date on Zelda. Like, don't hype the thing you're delaying.
I mean, there is a thing about, I mean, they did in the case of Breath of the Wild 2. I just feel like I need to qualify because everything that I'm about to say is going to contradict what it seems like Nintendo has done. But I also think the rules do apply differently for something like Breath of the Wild 2, but not totally differently. They did reveal Breath of the Wild 2 was E3 2019 was when they first unveiled it. Mm-hmm. At that point, pre-pandemic, pandemic doesn't happen, we're probably playing Breath of the Wild 2 by now, or yeah, close to it.
It has had a very long development time for a yeah game that is reusing an engine and assets. Like,
well,
and I mean, take your time, but
I would assume that Breath of the Wild 2, especially with how much time it's taken, because remember, Breath of the Wild 1, that is a Wii U engine.
Right, but it's the same. It's all Xenoblade X. It's an evolution. It's they didn't have to yeah work from scratch.
I mean, I do think with Breath of the Wild 2, I think it might. I mean, we'll probably find out more, but I think it's likely more like not complete scratch, but a lot more reworking than you might think.
They do have volumetric clouds in the trailer, which means they're probably just riding right alongside the Xenoblade engine still. Like, I am convinced that those two engines, I mean, we know that Monolith is working on both of them.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing that they are sibling engines, because probably, as one adds a feature, the other one seems to get it. like, there is so much, like, just little technical similarities between those games that's really interesting.
People always wonder, why does Nintendo keep on making Xenoblade games? Why aren't they making, you know, F-Zero or Wario Land games? If Wario Land and F-Zero, if work on them could also be constituted as work on Zelda, then you'd be in luck.
Right. Monolith Soft is, everybody thinks of them as Xenoblade, but they are Nintendo's, like, tech powerhouse for the Switch. Yeah.
And they do have the two studios like that. Like, yes, there is like the Xenoblade studio. And then because what it's the,
well, I think they might even be up to three.
Yeah, they might be. But I remember like looking into it and that like they basically have like there's like two offices or two studios or whatever, mm-hmm, both in Japan, at least. Maybe there is a third. But one of them is like Takahashi led. Like that's what makes the Xeno games. And then there's another one where it's like, yeah, we just help with everybody's tech stuff. Like, it's the IT department of Monolith fuels Nintendo.
Yeah, because even if you're not into Xenoblade, like, if you've ever seen footage of it, those games, ever since the first one, they push Nintendo's hardware probably farther than it should go in some cases, like Xenoblade mm-hmm 2. Like, they maybe go a little too far. But as far as just, like, the things they are doing, even if it's rendering at a low resolution, they are doing things that shouldn't work on this hardware. Yeah. And you will not find anybody else, like I mentioned, volumetric clouds are a thing that are like, okay, example for volumetric clouds, which nobody cares about except me. The idea of volumetric clouds is that they're actually like, they occupy 3D space. It's not just a picture of a cloud. In the recent Grand Theft Auto remake, if you played it on Xbox Series X or PS5, volumetric clouds were a feature of the next-gen hardware that was exclusive to the next-gen hardware. And that's not weird. Like, that's the level of feature that this is. Xenoblade 2, Breath of the Wild 2, and the trailers that we've seen of Xenoblade 3 have this feature, which shouldn't really happen on Switch, but Monolith Soft makes it happen. So yeah, they are tech masters when it comes to Nintendo's hardware. So yeah, they work on everything.
But a long digression to what I was initially saying is that I honestly don't think that Nintendo, even if Zelda comes out March next year, there's no pressure for Nintendo to show the game now.
No, they don't. Like, honestly, they don't need to ever again.
No.
Like, they could just be like, here's when it comes out, and be like, cool, sold.
They've had a pretty well-worn method for, like, and it's working. Mm-hmm. I mean, you see with it, like, I imagine that there might be, much like there was a Xenoblade Direct, maybe there is a specific Breath of the Wild 2 Direct in, you know, January or February next year or something like that.
Well, you do it with a short lead time and then you can manage that hype the entire time as opposed to managing it over years.
Yeah, because if you look at what Nintendo's been doing with all of their releases lately, it's been working out pretty well. Is if you mm-hmm look at Kirby, you know, Mario Strikers, even Mario Golf last year, Fire Emblem, what they're doing with Xenoblade, even Live Alive got a Treehouse Presents, Treehouse Live.
Yeah, like a secret unannounced Treehouse Live. Yeah, at least I didn't see it announced.
It was not announced during the Direct. I saw it mentioned in the press release and then the link went to nowhere and I was very confused. And then they like tweeted about it later. But like they've been doing either these kind of directs or other bigger form focused content, or they do stuff where it's just like the 5 to 10 minute overview trailers,
mm-hmm,
which are just very effective at like, here's the information. And I think that hits it directly in a way that it appears to be working, because then you can you can memeify it from there if needed. Like, look at how Kirby worked with mouthful mode.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, that did come from a direct that they revealed mouthful mode. But I think mouthful mode was what revealed like 6 weeks before launch.
Yeah, it still feeds into that idea of doing things very, keeping things close until, I mean, they've also just tightened up on like their leaky stuff in general. So like this stuff has largely been much more secret, except for Metroid Prime Remake.
Well, I think that's it's from the before time. You look at something that's like true. Mario
it has
Strikers.
Been around for so long that it was before they tightened up the leaks. Yeah.
More, I mean, like Mario Strikers and Three Hopes, honestly, as someone who rolls up his sleeves and gets into the Nintendo rumor shit, no mention of either of those.
Yeah.
Like or maybe or at least with Mario, outside of Next Level Games probably has a game soon. The only times I heard anything about Mario Strikers before it was announced was like, it'd be cool if they did another Mario Strikers. And after playing the game, maybe it wasn't good now.
No, it was fine.
I think it is a fine game that the post-launch DLC is going to make or break whether or not it's great.
And honestly, that post-launch DLC needs to come sooner rather than later.
Yeah. I did not expect to fall off as hard as I did on that game. Not that I don't think it's bad. It's just that I don't really feel a lot of motivation to play it.
Yeah, I would like to go, but I've been distracted by other things, but it's something that I would like to.
Yeah.
Like, as soon as that DLC hits, I think I'll have a very easy time getting back it, because I was into it pretty hard. They should have had the season start at launch.
Yes, or like Monday or something.
Yeah, having to wait over a week for the actual online to start kind of killed that experience for me.
But yeah, I mean, I don't think, and it became clearer as Nintendo kind of did things, you know, like have that Xenoblade 3 Direct. They don't necessarily need to have a big show until probably September, which, as is tradition, at this point, a consistent tradition more than them having June announcements, is having a direct in, you know, I don't know if any of them have ever been late August, but like just that early September range. I think late August is usually when they have an indie world.
Yeah, well, and we've talked before about like that September, now that they have the NSO subscriptions that, obviously, NSO started in September, and so those renew every September. Like, until they look at NSO and go, okay, the subscriptions have balanced out over the entire year, there will always be something in September.
Yeah.
Because it's their chance to pitch why you should subscribe for another year, which is a good move.
And since NSO launched, it was Nintendo, then it was Super Nintendo, then it was Super Mario All-Stars, because 2020 was a fake year, and then 2021 was the expansion pack with a Genesis N64 and the DLC stuff.
Was Earthbound a September thing?
No, Earthbound was the February direct.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I couldn't remember.
But we'll have more news, I'm sure, over the summer. We are due. Well, no, I think what golf is hitting Switch Sports in the fall.
Yep.
At least per their announcements. We should be getting leg strap support for regular soccer, which legitimately really excited for. Game of the year, leg strap support for Switch Sports Soccer. Like, I mean, honestly, that might get me to go buy a physical copy so I can have a second leg strap, so that way me and my oldest can play some multiplayer leg strap soccer, which sounds very, very dirty.
You can probably fashion your own from like a bandana.
Just tie it around your leg.
It is just duct taping a Joy-Con to your leg. Yeah.
Like, come here, son. It is funny because you know, he's a 4 year old. Whenever we do the Switch Sports Kick thing, which he loves, I have to like wrap it around him like 8 times because he's a skinny little boy.
Bulk up, kid.
Yeah. But we should be getting that over the summer. You know, DLC stuff for Mario Strikers will probably drop at any point. Fire Emblem Three Hopes, I don't think any DLC for that got announced, but like that's probably a thing.
It's a Musou game. It'll have DLC.
Mario Kart should be getting another pack of that, I would assume, over the summer. But that's the kind of stuff like that doesn't need to be in a full-fledged direct. It could be. I'm not ruling
sure,
out. Never say never.
It's a nice little garnish on top of a direct, but it can also just make for a nice random news drop, which they like to do.
Yeah, which could happen a lot throughout July and August. I'd throw down some money on a September direct or thereabouts.
Oh, yeah,
because that's when I think we get to where you need to address some gaps, so to speak. Even if I think that Nintendo's lineup I mean, for July, we have Live Alive, which it seems like Nintendo forgot about because Xenoblade 3 comes out the week after. Although Live Alive is also published by Square Enix in Japan. So Nintendo's probably like, oh, July's wide open.
Nintendo probably has a lot more money in Xenoblade than they do in Live Alive.
That is true. August, we do not have anything on tap. I mean, that could be a big time for the DLC to show up. That could be when Advance Wars actually comes out. And
that's when the first of the three Metroid Prime remakes comes out for this year.
Wonderful. I mean, at this point, I would say no. August seems off the table for that.
They're going to shadow drop it.
September is Splatoon 3. I think there's room for another first party release to come out in September, especially because Splatoon 3 is very early in the month. Probably a lower priority one. That could be once again. Advance Wars could be something that hits in September, hopefully not September 11th.
Yeah, maybe we don't wish for Advance Wars in September just to play it safe.
Although I think Splatoon is coming out September 9th, so we should be safe. But I mean, that could be something on the lines of WarioWare, and that could get announced once again at any point. It does not need to be in a direct. October, we got Mario and Rabbids as the sort of first party game.
Yeah, it's not quite first party, but
I believe it's published by Nintendo in Japan.
Oh, really?
Of. I know the first one was. It's a reverse like Octopath.
Okay.
Where it is something that like Ubisoft is making that game. It's just that in another region, Nintendo's publishing it, much like how, you know, Octopath, you know, Square Enix made that game. It's just Nintendo's publishing it outside of Japan.
I did have the thought as I was watching that we're recording this on the day that Ubisoft did their little like 10 minute long Mario and Rabbids presentation. I had the thought watching that like, boy, there's an alternate reality where Mario and Rabbids never quite caught on. And now Ubisoft is making their just Switch exclusive Star Fox Starlink sequel instead. Because those were the two things that Ubisoft tried. One of them worked, one of them didn't. There is an alternate reality out there somewhere.
I hate to break your heart. I think Mario and Rabbids is a better game than Starlink.
I don't disagree. I just like it's like object. Though granted, I never finished the first one. I was scared it was going to melt my Switch because no game has made my Switch run as hot as Mario and Rabbids.
It's a really good game. I need to.
I put like hundreds of hours into Xenoblade and like Witcher 3, and like those were fine. But Mario and Rabbids, my poor Switch just could not do it. I'm scared to put it in the OLED.
Did that kill my... Because I had the issue... Mario & Rabbids, I actually have not finished as well because my Switch died in August 2017 and I lost all my save data. So I was like dozens of hours into Mario & Rabbids.
I forgot how early your Switch... Like, your Switch did not last long.
Yeah. Units, man. Nintendo poisoned it.
Hey, mine's...
They're like, he gave it a 9.5 instead of a 10. Kill it.
Yep. Flip the Switch.
Yeah, I mean, but that's a big part of the reason, because I got it physically, but then I saw the DLC. It was actually cheaper to get the gold version than the DLC separately. I have it digitally as well. And I've heard the Donkey Kong DLC is really good. So I at least want to play far enough to be able to play that. I think you need to like beat the first world or two. And I've like messed around with it with my kid, but like strategy gameplay is not exactly fit for a 3 or 4 year old.
I also
with that in mind, even though I do think Mario and Rabbids Sparks of Hope, which is coming out on October 20th as confirmed in the direct this week, I think that's very much an honorary first party game for October, so to speak. There's definitely room for another game.
Nintendo may definitely view it as a like that covers their obligation for October if it needs to.
But I think Bayonetta 3 could be a good fit for October. Once again, there's probably something that we aren't aware about. And I do think if there is that direct in early September, they absolutely could announce a relatively, you know, like smaller tier thing in October.
Keep in mind that they announced like Mario 3D All-Stars like 2 weeks before it came out.
Yep.
Like they can do things with a pretty fast turnaround.
I'm trying to think of other things. I mean, Ring Fit Adventure, I think, was revealed a month before it came out. Not even.
Yeah, it was very quick.
I mean, even like Paper Mario, I forgot about this. Like literally 2 months to the day of its launch was when it was announced and dated.
Like, yeah,
That's my people.
Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity, I think, was a pretty quick turnaround, too, if I remember right.
I mean, that was also 2020, which is a fake year.
Arguably, that just makes it more impressive.
Yeah. I mean, it's more because, like, what stuff that they would have announced during E3 when, like, Nintendo just went dark for the majority of the year. They were like, oh, we have these games that are coming out in 3 months. Crap. We need to come up with a marketing plan.
Was that the year that they just kept posting the same GIF of Dunban from Xenoblade Definitive Edition?
I think
they
so.
Had nothing else to post.
Yeah,
that was a good time.
Xenoblade 1 came out May of 2020, I think.
Yeah, and then like the PR, the marketing team on social networks were just like, this is all we have. And so they just kept posting Dunban in different outfits.
There's Dunban over there.
Which was great.
Yeah.
Arguably Nintendo's golden age, really.
But yeah, I mean, there's precedent for them announcing stuff in a very quick timeline. It's why a lot of the typical need for an event like E3 and announcing your holiday lineup like you used to isn't really as needed.
Don't need it now.
It
no,
isn't required.
You can just go directly to
nice?
People.
Is it nice? It's fun. I like it.
Sure.
Also, like, real talk, what got revealed in, like, fake E3 this year that is, like, look at the big holiday title that I never knew about before?
Oh, no. I mean, the biggest reveal from E3 was actually seeing Starlink, and that's not out until next
Starfield.
Year.
Starfield.
Starfield. Yeah, whatever. Star something.
Yeah.
Something that isn't Fox.
I mean, like, we saw more of Sonic Frontiers, but, like, we knew that game existed. We knew that game was aiming for this year. Like, I don't think there was any, like, here's a game coming out November 2022.
Mm-hmm.
Get hyped. It's like the Call of Duty game, but, like, Call of Duty's been doing that same schedule for eternity. I don't even know when Call of Duty, the new one, was, like, rolled out and announced. Because I don't care.
It was during that general period.
Yeah, it's usually, like, during the NBA playoffs that, like, here's the trailer.
Well, they're also back in their thing of just making one they already made again.
Yeah.
But not calling it, like, a remake
so
or anything.
Confused.
It's when the
like,
dumbest
here's the
thing.
Sequel to, we got Modern Warfare 2. And in my mind, I'm like, yeah, that came out in, like, 2012.
You already did that.
Yeah,
and then you're watching the trip.
It is the sequel to Modern Warfare from like 2019. I'm like, no, it's not. Like, Modern Warfare came out like it was like 2007, man.
Right. I played that on my Wii.
Yeah, in like 2010.
Right. Yeah, I think the Wii version came out day and date with the second Modern Warfare on
Honestly,
everything else.
Modern Warfare Remastered on Wii. Pretty good game.
It was the Reflex Edition.
Oh, the
Thank
Reflex.
You.
Yeah, the Reflex yeah. Edition. That was it.
No, I have been toying with the idea of doing a stupid feature on the Call of Duty ports for Wii.
They're good. Well, not all of them.
I'm scared to, because I remember enjoying them at the time, and I'm terrified to boot them back up now and just be like, oh, good God.
Whenever Treyarch touched one, it was usually pretty good.
I'm pretty sure Treyarch did all of them.
At least, like, I remember, this is also a little bit of bias because, differences of Call of Duty games on the Wii. All right, let's go to this wiki page. I am a little biased because the first like ridiculous gaming event that I ever went to was one for World at War.
Mm-hmm.
But also I actually like played World at War. It was pretty good.
Yeah, they were good ports that like were trying really hard.
I do. Oh my God, this is entire the Call of Duty like fandom wiki. It's differences of Call of Duty games on the Wii, and it is a very long article.
Yeah, I know, like, Black Ops 2 was straight up missing segments of levels that they couldn't
Call
get
of
to
Duty,
work.
Call of Duty World at War. Zombies is completely missing. Co-op campaign is also gone. There is no voice chat in multiplayer. The ray gun Easter egg is unavailable in the level Resistance. Only 8 maps are available in multiplayer. Like, I mean, whatever.
It was, listen, the fact that they got the multiplayer to work was, because I played a lot of that multiplayer, and it ran fine,
yeah.
Which is weird. Anyway.
Now I'm fascinated by this.
Yeah, you're down a rabbit hole now.
Yeah. Anyway, I do think the Call of Duty, I mean, they probably don't hold up now because they look like visual soup. But the controls and everything were pretty good. Treyarch understood how to make a Wii game. Not all of the things that they made were gold. I think they did a terrible Spider-Man game, but like they understood how to make a Wii game.
Well, they did some weird, like in the, so their first, I'm gonna flex my Call of Duty Wii knowledge. In the first, like, they did Call of Duty 3 for Wii, which was the first one that came out on that. And in that one, like,
game?
Yeah, launch or very near to launch. It was one of the first games I got on Wii. And there was stuff like when you would get in a car to like there'd be sections of levels where you had to drive. When you got in a car, you would just hold the Wii remote and nunchuck out in front of you like you were holding onto a steering wheel and just turn them, and that would drive the car, and it was nuts. And they did ease off on that stuff later on, but that was always the stuff in Wii games that I loved, like making, like in Metroid Prime 3, to open a door, how you have to like pull the thing out and then turn it and then push it back in.
Yeah.
And they make you do that. Like that shit works for me in Wii games.
I love it.
So yeah, if you tell me to get in a car and they're like, now hold it like a steering wheel, I'm like, hell yes. So
I do remember having a conversation with someone at a Treyarch around, I forget which Call of Duty Wii game it was, but how they, or maybe it was one of the Spider-Man games or something they worked on, but they just like had the realization as they were making a Wii game about how like, oh, like the Wii remote is like, it's your sword, it's your attack, and the nunchuck is your shield. And then like, mm-hmm. they saw what Nintendo was doing with Zelda and they're like, okay, yeah, they realized that too. This wasn't an original thought. They were like, yeah. Crestfallen because they're like, we look at this great idea. And they're like, oh, Nintendo already. Okay.
Yeah. Good try, though.
Anyway, October. Yeah, Bayonetta 3, if that is indeed coming out this year. October seems like a good place to have it.
Yeah. Was that one of Silux's claims?
He said October 28th.
Okay, yeah. So
that was Bayonetta
100% 3, which... guaranteed. Especially yeah. since I haven't heard it from Samus Hunter. So...
looking at that, I definitely feel like there's a gap where we'll see some kind of, you know, low to mid-tier Nintendo game come, because Splatoon 3 is September 9th. If Bayonetta 3 is indeed October 28th, then that's
nearly a big gap.
2 months.
Yeah. Well, if ever there was a mid to low tier Nintendo game, Advance Wars might fit the bill.
I mean, it could be.
Yeah.
Maybe everybody's 1-2 Switch or whatever that is. Maybe that's...
Are they actually making that, or were they just like, nobody liked it, we're not going to do it?
I believe, and I know from the story and corroborating sources, I think it like went through QA and everything, so I'd be baffled if it didn't hit stores.
Hey, so did Star Fox 2.
That's true. It's a different era.
Yeah, more business, it's never driven. Too late to cancel a game.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. November, we got Pokemon.
That does it. We don't know anything for December yet, and Nintendo does normally yeah. have a December game.
And I mean, it's something that I believe people were talking about this week, and I've heard it talked about countless again, and can corroborate insider sources. I mean, Metroid Prime 1 is coming out at some point this year,
right?
I imagine. And hey, you know when, you know, it's November, that is the 20th anniversary of Metroid Prime.
Oh,
seems like a pretty good time to release you know, some kind of remastered version of Metroid Prime.
Well, then I can guarantee you that if there's one time it will not release, it's November.
That would be funny. They're like, yeah, psych, it's actually coming out in December. We could have done this nicely. It's 20 years and 1 month, because when have we been on time lately?
Yeah, it's like they'll always release Star Wars games in like mid-May, and it's like, guys,
yeah,
May the 4th, come on.
Yep, you could have like just, you know, crunched a little bit more. We know you were crunching already.
Yeah,
but there is some other stuff throughout. I mean, like, we're getting a fuller picture of what the Switch as a whole, the lineup for the fall and the holiday, because I think. Like,
yeah,
because
that's essentially just first yeah. party stuff, what we talked about.
Like we look at the summer, which I think with Live Alive and Xenoblade 3, like July's got some hot RPG action. There's a lot of other stuff coming out. Some of the highlights that I kind of noted from July, Klonoa is coming out in early July. I'm really mm-hmm. excited for that. I think people really like Digimon Survive. I don't really know why. More power to you.
We've got the weird League of Super Pets game that for some reason is a Star Fox game.
Yeah, which like might be good. Who knows? And then August, Two Point Campus, which I know Two Point Hospital was incredible, according to one Jordan mm-hmm. Rudek. Pac-Man World Repack, which the
super Hell yes.
biggest news of the Nintendo Direct is a 1999 PS1 3D platformer coming back. Let's go.
Here's the thing, boys. You have to understand about the Pac-Man World games, and I think I may have brought this up on the podcast before, is that these games have a decent cult following, and Namco has refused to acknowledge their existence since they came out and has re-released every other Pac-Man game multiple times but never touched these games. So the fact that not only are they going to make one available, but like it's actually like a full nice looking remake, is incredible. Please do the rest of them, or at least give me HD ports. Like, I'll take whatever you want.
Because then Pac-Man World 2 and 3, they're both on GameCube, right?
Yeah, those were GameCube, PS2, and Xbox.
Okay. Was there anything, was 3 the last one?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Now, I remember playing 2, because 2 was the one that came with Pac-Man Versus. Or there was, like, the bundle 2
was,
with it.
Yes. Yeah, 2 was incredible. I think 2 is generally regarded, it's my favorite, and I think it's generally regarded as the best one. I did look on Metacritic the other day, and it sits at a 74. Like, that is the definition of when I say the best games are 7.5s. Like, Pac-Man World 2 is that game.
I just remember it being, like, a very, like, good, not great 3D platformer.
Yeah, exactly. It like, does run at 60 frames per second. Like, it's so buttery smooth. It's great.
Looking at the rest of the list, I don't know, August may be a little light. Pac-Man World is definitely my highlight. I don't know what to make of RPG Time, The Legend of Wright, which was shown off in the Nintendo Direct. I think it looks really cool, but I just, like, I don't know if I want to play that game or not, but I'll probably wait to see if we review it or other people play it. It might be neat. Cult of the Lamb, that is from these people that made this, the Massive Monster, I think is the name of the developer. Mm-hmm. And they made this game called The Adventure Pals, which is just basically like, it is essentially Adventure Time, but off brand and like a really solid 2D platformer. Anyway, their next game is about like cartoon animal cultists.
Yeah.
They kind of went off in a different direction, but I've been kind of just seeing some of the buzz because I think there was like a Steam preview or something. People were talking about Hands-On. Maybe it was playable at Summer Games Fest. I don't know.
It might. Well, and it had a pretty substantial trailer in the Devolver Digital event.
Seems like it's great. Looking it looks forward good. To it.
Yeah.
And then Midnight Fight Express, which is one that the trailer didn't exactly wow me, but I know Matt Zawadniak and Joe DeVader, I think they both played it during the Steam Summer Games Fest demos, and they seemed very taken by it. And it is a Humble Games published game, I think it's Humble Games. And
that sounds
what
right.
I've learned is that Humble can publish a very good video game. As like Dodgeball Academia and Carto are honestly two of my favorite indie games on Switch.
Yep. I will say it, if looking ahead to September, biggest news for me is that they finally decided that Ark was so bad, they're just going to try again on Switch. Ark released on Switch back in, when
2018?
Was that? Yeah, it was pretty early and was just monumentally terrible. It had disconnect issues when you were playing offline, which is an accomplishment. So they have brought in a new studio, which they have not named, to start over and just make the Switch version again. And then they are going to release that as an update to just so like your save will carry over, but the entire game's code will just be purged and replaced.
Oh my God.
Which is, I can't think of another time. Well, I think they might have done that with the Zone of the Enders remakes that were on like PS4. I guess those were, I think, really bad when they came out. And those essentially had the same thing where another studio just came in and redid them from scratch.
Oh, yeah. But no, I do remember that.
It's such a, like, this is so weird. So, yeah, the nice thing is it'll give me an excuse to open the sealed physical copy that they sent me after sending me a digital review copy. so I'll try that'll be like the review copy for this version. And I get to revisit one of my lowest review scores of all time.
The other fascinating thing was a game that I was actually excited for when it was announced on Switch like 15 years ago. If you remember, I played it on GameCube, but I think it was GameCube, mm-hmm. PS2, Xbox, a game called 13, Roman numerals XIII. It's based off of comic book, I think, but it was a really cool first person shooter. Had like great local multiplayer, mm-hmm. a cool cel shaded look. There was a remake that came out a couple years ago, and I think it was dated for Switch and came out on other platforms, and the Switch version got kind of delayed at the last minute, as is wont to do. And then the version that came out was horrifically bad. So I like did a double take until I saw this game on a release list when we were getting ready for this. Because we did get an email PR for it, but I was like, no, that came out like 3 years ago and it was terrible. But they are finally releasing the Switch version, which I did not realize didn't come out. That is coming out on September 13th. And I'm bringing up, here is what they're doing. I don't know if they completely changed developers. Oh, okay. Yes, they did. To Tower 5. Yeah. So they've been working on more than a year on a major update. And the studio also worked on the Nintendo Switch port of the game. And apparently multiplayer wasn't in the initial release. Jeez.
Yeah, I know the initial release was pretty universally panned.
Yeah. And apparently the online multiplayer mode for up to 13 players, which actually sounds pretty cool. So here's the list of what they're refined art style, enhanced AI, reworked HUD, revamped sound design, 30 FPS on Switch, 60 on PS5 and Xbox Series S, Xbox Series, and online multiplayer from 2 to 13 players.
All right.
Legitimately,
that's 2 players for Switch and 13 players for everything else. Yeah.
Legitimately fascinated by this, because it'd be cool if that, like, I've been reading that GoldenEye boss fight books, which they're doing a Kickstarter for, which really, I mean, Kickstarter with the blockchain stuff is nonsense, but boss fight books rules. And guess what? The GoldenEye book is fantastic, and it's really making me mad that every rumory thing about GoldenEye has been false so far.
Well, that's what's crazy is that, like, that's one where, like, we can talk however much we want about, like we know Metroid Prime Remake exists, but like with GoldenEye, it's like, no, like, you can, the achievements are on the server. Yeah. Like, it, we're not, this isn't some like Star Fox Grand Prix rumor. It, like, it's, it exists. It's there. Yeah. You can see it. It's sitting right there. We know it's happening. I think
the thing we don't know is we don't know the full implementation of it. Is that we can assume that GoldenEye exists as a game on Xbox, probably PC as well. Whenever this does get revealed, is it coming to Nintendo at all? Because I think the rumors, as it were, is that there was, much like there's the very, very good Perfect Dark Xbox 360 Xbox Live Arcade remake, which, remember how Perfect Dark on N64 seemed like it was like held together with like toothpicks? Imagine if that wasn't the case and there was online play, because Perfect Dark on Xbox Live Arcade is that, and it rules, and it's playable on your Xbox Series S or X or whatever you want. It might even be on PC, I have no idea, but like that Perfect Dark remake is incredible. Apparently there was a GoldenEye one of that got held up in legal stuff.
The 360 version leaked a while back. Yes. Like, it's, we, once again, we know it's real because it's been played.
Yeah. And I think it's the kind of thing where there's complicated legal stuff, because it's the Bond people and Nintendo are both kind of thorny. I get the feeling, from what I know, I think the Xbox 360 thing, probably Bond was more of the issue than Nintendo, but I also think that Nintendo probably, like, Nintendo made it not worth to fight the Bond people.
Well, and what's interesting is during that era, they remade GoldenEye, which was very good, by the way.
Yeah, great game.
When it was Wii exclusive at first, but then eventually did come out on 360.
Yep.
But it was Activision that developed that.
Yeah. But I think you had the kind of thing where it was like Microsoft wanting to put out the Rare game that Nintendo had published, that had, you know, whatever, I forget what the, you know, MGM sold off the rights to Apple. I forget what like the Bond company's called. Eon Productions. I think that's, I think that's it. And then Activision had the Bond game license. So I think it was like this very complex thing. And right now, I don't know if anybody has the James Bond game license, because I don't think Activision has it anymore.
I haven't seen a James Bond game come out since, what, the one on Wii U?
Was there even one on Wii U?
Yeah,
was it Legends or whatever? 007 Legends? Yeah, I think that was the last one.
Yeah, I mean, once you peak with a Wii U game, why really continue?
But GoldenEye exists. It's just that, how is that good? The dream is Switch, Xbox, cross-play, multiplayer, let's go. The reality is probably going to be this awesome, rad remake on Xbox, and then we get the N64 version on that. So
yeah, and that can be, I mean, like, when it came to, and I don't think, like, GoldenEye doesn't have the, I don't remember there being any like Nintendo branding stuff that would have to be changed. I did appreciate in Banjo just that, like, there was stuff they had to change for the 360 version because it was very specifically Nintendo that was then was still there on the Switch version. So I still think that was kind of a valuable version.
Have to change DK mode to Big Head mode.
Was it called? I don't remember.
It was called DK mode. Either that or the boss fight books is lying to me. I'm honestly the way this is going to happen is that I'm going to finish that book and then hook up my N64 and play GoldenEye. Like I'm salivating over reading about like, oh my God, the single player is so good. I love the multiplayer so much. And yeah. I will probably be let down playing a first person shooter from a system that was back in 1997.
Perfect Dark was better. Even Perfect Dark had problem on N64, but
it had a lot of problems on N64.
Yeah, GoldenEye, it's very good for the time. But even as far as N64 shooters go, like there are other N64, like I'll take Doom 64 or arguably even Quake 64 over GoldenEye, I think, be honest.
I think for single player, I think Perfect Dark single player is probably better than GoldenEye's, but I have way more nostalgia for GoldenEye's.
Sure. Yeah.
But anyway, digression of a thing that is not officially announced.
It's but real, anyway, I tell
13
you.
13 remake. Let's go. September is kind of on the lighter side. There's always, you know, a good space for indies, maybe. Mm-hmm. But October from third parties is kind of lit. We got Mario & Rabbids, which you kind of referenced before. I guess Overwatch 2, if you're still playing Activision games. No Man's Sky, Star Trek Prodigy Supernova, Persona 5 Royal, and Nier Automata are all coming out in October. And that is kind of just
a lot of space and a lot of weeb. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, No Man's Sky, yes. Nier Automata, maybe I'll play that this time around.
It's apparently only $40, which. For game that's a couple years old, coming like that feels fair. You could probably get it for $15 on Steam or whatever. But like it's a new game on Switch. It seems all right. It's better than 60. Yeah,
as long as the port's decent, though. I know I was doing some research on it because this was one of the things that was rumored to be in this direct. And it is, I believe it's the same engine that runs like Bayonetta 2 and Astral Chain.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. So it kind of hopefully that means that the porting process to Switch was fairly reasonable. It's not like an Unreal Engine game or something that doesn't have the best history running on Switch. So hopefully it'll be good. The trailer looked decent.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'll probably try it. I don't know, man. Who knows?
Yeah, and Persona 5 Royal will run fine on Switch. It is a PS3 game.
Yep. With a new hat.
With a new hat. Big new hat.
It's the kind of thing where I haven't really cared about Persona in a very long time, but everybody talks about how good Persona 5 is, and actually, as I'm catching myself, I've also heard that Persona 5 Royal is three full days of my life, but I think that might actually be an understatement. I think it's like a 100 plus hour game minimum, and I already have enough Xenoblade games that I'm like, this is 70 hours, get out.
I trust people when they say it's good. I look at it and go, that is the exact opposite of the style of game that I would like to play. But you guys enjoy.
I played Persona 3 Fez when I was in college on PS2. I thought it was amazing. And then I kept on falling asleep whenever I played Persona 4 Golden on my Vita. And then I was kind of like, maybe these aren't for me. But I mean, everybody does love Persona 5. It is maybe if it's on a platform that I engage with more frequently, maybe I'll check it out. Who knows? Hope springs eternal.
And then from there, like for November and December, we don't have a ton of stuff announced for like third party or indies. Though we do have Dragon Quest in December and Harvestella in November.
I'm really curious about Harvestella.
It's Harvestella. It's Spanish.
Harvestella. You gotta roll the R more. But it is basically Square Enix making Rune Factory is what that game is, and
it does look better than Rune Factory 5.
Oh my
we should
God,
make
yes,
Alex
it
review
does.
It.
Yeah, we should. But it depends on who's making it at Square Enix. I feel like in the apps, well, I guess like Jordan's there with me as far as being a Square Enix stan on staff, but I go goo goo over their their remakes and stuff, or their ports, like Chrono Cross. I mean, like, just what a gem. I love that game so much. And Live Alive is coming from Square Enix, even if it's, you know, published by Nintendo. And even looking at some of the other stuff that they have announced for this year, really, really excited for Romancing Saga Minstrel Song Remastered, which is a remaster of a remake of the first Romancing Saga game. That I think Minstrel Song is a PS2 game. But I'm excited for that because I like the Saga games. There's also Deerfield Chronicle, which is Square Enix doing Fire Emblem. That looks like it might be pretty cool.
When does the Final Fantasy Crisis Core Reunion Tour come out? Isn't that this year?
That's holiday. Yeah, that's holiday. Yeah. I didn't have that listed. Crisis Core. I've heard that game is great, and I'm realizing something about myself as I consider getting a PS5 to coincide with the release of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, or whatever it's called. Or no, is it?
This one's Rebirth.
Crisis Core Rebirth.
No, Crisis Core Reunion.
Oh, Crisis Core
Final
Reunion.
Final Fantasy VII Remake Part 2 Rebirth.
Yeah, but like I accept that I did not realize how much I cared about Final Fantasy VII until they made a Final Fantasy VII game that was basically Chrono Cross. but like I legitimately like the my motivation for getting a PS5 is going to be to play the next Final Fantasy VII remake game. So yeah, I've never played Crisis Core because I did not own a PSP and it was kind of a pain to play otherwise without, you know, emulating or anything.
Yeah, I haven't played it either, but watching the trailer for it, I'm like, oh, that actually looks like something that I would play. Yeah,
it's supposed to have a really cool battle system.
And I'm probably not going to play Final Fantasy VII Remake until maybe one day it shows up on Game Pass.
Please come to Xbox. I would like to replay Remake. That's what, during that Final Fantasy VII thing the other month, I was just like, fingers crossed. I was like, I'll give you $60. It doesn't need to be on Game Pass. I just want to be able to like replay that game because it was the last thing that I played before my PS4 died. And I did not feel like buying it. I don't have the space for the size of a PS5. And I don't feel like buying a PS4 to play one game.
Yeah, I don't want to hook my PS4 back up.
I can send you my copy of Remake if you want to.
There you go. You send me your cop. I'll dig out my PS4.
And then you can send me your PS4 after and I can replay it.
There you go. Yeah. Just pass it around.
But yeah, that's coming out. I mean, Square is a very prolific company. And with that, I do have some concerns about Harvestella, only because I need to know who's making it before I get super hyped. But there is a breakdown of the game on Square Enix's website that, it's basically like, you know, in internally written marketing blog. But hearing, like, the trailer seemed okay, but kind of seeing it written out, I'm definitely curious about the potential of that game. But there's a lot of, like, TBD as far as if I'm really excited for it.
Yeah, it's just it's a pretty well-explored genre at this point. So, like, if they're just making Rune Factory, then I don't really care.
Yeah. And there was a lot of farming. There was Doraemon Story of Seasons. There was Harvestella.
I do really like the look of that one.
Yeah. The Story of Seasons one. I think there was one of those on 3DS, I want to say. Well,
they had that
maybe I'm getting that mixed up with the Pop LaCroix.
I don't know what it's
maybe
called.
Maybe I'm getting that mixed up. I thought there was a Doraemon
Picross Story of Seasons, I believe is what it was called. Either way, I liked the art style.
Oh, no. Okay, so there is a second one. There was Doraemon Story of Seasons came out on Switch in 2019 and then on PS4 in 2020. And this is Doraemon Story of Seasons Friends of the Great Kingdom, which is coming out the Switch, PS5, and PC later this year.
Okay. Shows you how much attention I'm paying to the farming sim category of the Switch eShop.
But other things that I'm stoked for 2022 Pokemon Scarlet and Violet has a release date, like they're with bells on. Another thing, along with my realization that I just love Final Fantasy VII Remake nonsense, I love me some Pokemon. Like, that game looks great. Very, very stoked for Lechonk.
I'm terrified of that game being less than Arceus.
The marketing buildup for that's going to be fun. They just,
they haven't shown me the key elements of, like, how am I going to catch that Pokemon? Can I sneak up to it without fighting it? Because that is the linchpin.
It is this, like, the dance that they're doing with the, the marketing for Scarlet and Violet is like chef's kiss incredible, because they, for some reason, it's either it's not like Arceus and they don't want to piss off all the people that like Arceus, or it's like Arceus and they don't want to piss off all the people that were like, I don't like the new thing.
Yeah, but those people were wrong and we don't need to listen to them. Yeah,
Sonic Frontiers, I'm darkly excited for, because my kid's really into Sonic now. But like, the more that I see about that game, did you hear about the Game Informer cover story stuff?
I saw them tweet out some more details, but
Big the Cat is going to be in the fishing mini game.
Where else would he be?
Yeah,
I hope it works better than the fishing mini game in Adventure.
Like, I don't know if this game will be good or not. I do remember, I think Sonic fans were very mad that there's a skill tree.
Yeah, Sonic fans have other things they need to worry about being mad about first.
Like, I do get that, like, is, you know, you have that very specific view of what your series should be, Justin Berube. And when Nintendo puts out a game like Zelda Breath of the Wild that, you know, stops doing the same thing and actually does something new for the first time in 20 years, it's kind of cool.
Especially when, like, the previous 20 years haven't been good.
Even charitably, if you're like, Generations and Colors are good, there's still like 20 years or like there's on either side of that, there is 10 years of crap.
There crap and like crap that like we can all kind of agree. Like, even if you like Sonic, you're not looking at Sonic Unleashed and being like, no, that was a 10 out of 10 masterpiece that everyone loved. We can all agree that like Sonic Forces had some issues.
And everybody craps on Sonic Lost World. Like, this game is
Sonic
fine.
Lost World is the closest they've ever gotten to good.
I think Sonic Lost World is my favorite non-2D Sonic game since Adventure 2.
Sonic Adventure was good because Sonic went, what if we tried to do Mario 64? And Sonic Lost World was good because Sega went, what if we tried to do Mario Galaxy?
So Sonic Frontiers might be good because they're like, what if we tried to do Sonic but Breath of the Wild?
Maybe. Yeah, it's like, no original Sonic game is good. They're only good when they're curbing off Nintendo. Like, even the old 2D ones were just knockoff Mario.
Yeah, they were like, all right, what if we were Mario but fast?
Right, that they didn't tell the level designers for the first game.
I'm playing Sonic Origins, which I think I've been enjoying, but Sonic 1 feels like a game that they made the level designs and then found out how the character worked.
Yes. Hilarious. I believe I said that in the video that almost didn't get me hired at NWR, like, 10 years ago. Yeah. Like, the level designers made a Mario game and the character designers made a race car. And then we're like, put this race car in your Mario game. And it's like, oh, that doesn't work for most of the levels.
And I feel like they had the chance to go back and tweak, because I feel like the first, like, what is it, Green Hill and then Marble, like, I think those kind of work. Like, I like those stages a lot. It's when I got near that, like, Labyrinth can just go die in a fire.
Marble is a slow-paced 2D platforming stage. You are underground, standing on small,
that's fair.
Floating platforms. Like, there's at no point in that game can you ever actually go fat, like, at like,
yeah,
the first like Green Hill Zone, 100%, that is a Sonic level. I still think it's horribly designed, but like, clearly they made it for that character. Marble Zone, if you were to mod that game so you were playing as Mario instead, that level would play better, because instead you're playing as a slippery character in a level where you need to land on tiny platforms. Like, it's
they do have some cool, like, they have like missions in Sonic Origins, and it's kind of neat how they'll, because it'll be stuff where it's like, oh, like, the spiky little snake guys, like, oh, like, hit five of these within this time limit, and it's like a part of Marble Zone where you kind of need to like jump over some lava, avoid some spikes pretty quickly. Like, it's fun. Like, those things are neat. I know there's kind of some dissension, I think, out there, because I think Sonic Origins, they are not like picture perfect emulation things.
Well, they're remakes.
Sort of, yeah.
It's not, they're not emulated at all. They are native ports.
Yeah.
Which is impressive, but also they have problems.
So they have a story mode in this where like there's really good animation that kind of links them together. So it goes Sonic 1, which we talked about, is it, I don't think Sonic 1 is horrifically bad, but I definitely like, it's rose colored glasses for the parts that I've played the most. And I think like when you get, I mean, it's Labyrinth Zone's the worst offender, and I think the rest of the game is somewhere between okay and good. I think Sonic CD is terrible. That's the second one that they send you through. And then you do Sonic 2 and then 3 and Knuckles, which 2, that's the one I've replayed the most recently. I love 2. I think 2 is very good.
What I will give to 2 and 3 / Knuckles is that they at least knew what the game, like, they were trying.
Yeah.
Like, I still have a lot of issues with the core idea of the game, but they clearly designed the levels to be played while using Sonic as your player character.
Yeah. And now I can do it as Knuckles.
Which I honestly, like, even Sonic CD, I don't really feel like, and it's been a long time since I played CD, but I remember that game being primarily just these maze-like giant levels.
It's bad.
That are just so not fun to explore.
It is also the time travel conceit is neat, but like, and it feels like a lot of the levels are designed to hit gotcha moments way more than, I mean, Sonic 1, which I literally played the two games back to back, and like CD noticeably was just like, gotcha. And I'm like, dude, I couldn't even have seen that. Like, there's no way, unless I had a preternatural knowledge of what this level was, no way.
Right.
And Sonic 2, which is a game that I definitely have more ingrained in my brain, so it is hard to separate from, like, you know, that preternatural knowledge.
It definitely, like, does that too, but not as much.
It does that, but I think it's to a level where it's not as obnoxious. And I don't mind, like, a little bit of that trial and error, like, as a way of, like, you can go fast, but, like, going too fast blindly might screw you over. But it's also, like, the punishment with that. Like, you know, moments where you go too fast and there's, like, a springboard that sends you backwards. Like, sometimes it's like that might just be like it could hit you into an enemy. Whereas I feel like in Sonic CD, I believe I ran into one of those that just like sent me off a cliff and I died.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that I think that whole like you're going fast and you hit a springboard and you get sent backwards, like that kind of sucks to begin with. But at least if you do it, like have it be something where it's not instant death.
Have it be inconsequential.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I have said before, but the concept of making a game where your entire thing is it's fun to go fast. And then I'm like, cool, I'm going to go fast. And they're like, stop it. Like, why are you? It's literally if in Mario, they were like, don't jump. But that's what you told me to do.
Sonic Frontier sounds kind of neat because it's like, here's a big open world where you can go fast. And maybe that game's going to be terrible. It's probably going to be terrible. But
do you think the Switch can support you going fast?
No.
Like, I am amazed that they had the balls to show Switch footage of that game at this Direct.
I am fascinated. I think you said it when they showed the IGN footage. And it's the best way that I can say is that, like, I don't think I'm excited for this game and the fact that, like, it'd be cool if it was good. It probably won't be. And if it's not good, it's going to be wild seeing how bad it is.
And I think there is going to be a fight for who gets to review this game.
I don't know if I want to review it. I think I want to see someone else review it. And then
I'll review it.
Yeah. All right, John. Step up to the plate.
Can it be any worse than Balan Wonderworld? But
don't say those words.
Like,
I was looking through old Nintendo Direct mini partner showcases and saw Balan show up in one. I was like, well, it can't be worse than that. So,
yeah, I can already tell it's a lower resolution than that. 3D Sonic. I don't play 3D Sonic because I think it's going to be a good game. I love 3D Sonic and I buy all of them because they're incredible in their just blatant misunderstanding of humanity in general.
Forces, I believe, is $10 on the eShop. Should I get it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, then you and your son can make a fursona together that represents your joint character. And then you can listen to Tails scream about how Sonic's dead in the opening cutscene.
Maybe I'll skip past that part with my child.
I mean, if it makes you feel better, it's like immediate, like they're like, Sonic's dead, next level. Hey, it's Sonic. He's been tortured by Eggman for the 90 months.
90 degree day, went to a minor league baseball game, and my son wanted to wear his boots so he could be like Knuckles, his Aww. Rain boots. And he does do this adorable thing where you're like, hey, use your super speed. And then he like gets down like he's in like a runner stance. and then slowly runs.
Literally the opposite, child. Have you've been watching Sonic Boom with him, right?
It's really good.
I was gonna say, like, are you enjoying it more than him?
Because
I
incredible. Feel like
it's so good,
and it's just like so goofy and fun. Like, I'm trying to think of the. I mean, there was the one episode where like Robotnik's or Eggman is the film director or whatever. Like, that's a good mm-hmm. one. I'm like, it's a lot of like half paying attention to it, but whenever I kind of pay attention to like some of the dialogue, I'm like, oh, that's good.
It's so, it's very cleverly written, and it's the best Sonic thing that has come out of the last 20 years.
Yeah.
It's great. If only the Sonic Boom games had the same commitment to quality.
It's a shame. I think there's one 3DS game that's like, okay.
I think there was a 3DS game that got like a 6.5.
Yeah.
Which on the Sonic scale is like,
that's like
the Sonic
10.
Scale goes from 1 to 7.
So, I think that like this as far as you know, Nintendo with this Direct and what they're setting up for 2022, the rest of 2022 to be. I think we kind of touched on a lot of broad strokes of it. I imagine we'll, like we said, get some news throughout the summer, probably a bigger Direct in September. You know, your traditional indie world in, I don't know, probably one in August around Gamescom, maybe one in December. We'll have some Pokemon Directs here and there.
Probably a Splatoon Direct in August, like mid-August. Yeah.
Or maybe even it could. I would feel like right after Xenoblade, open season.
Yeah, I guess I'm just thinking. Yeah, like for Splatoon, I'm thinking like the same gap from Splatoon and its Direct as Xenoblade had with its Direct, which I guess was like a month and a half.
Yeah. So maybe that's coming mid July or something like that. We'll find out.
Yeah.
Because Splatoon, there's a lot of. We know some modes. We haven't seen the single player outside of some like rough teases. And they're definitely ramping up that marketing hype cycle.
I'd like them to convince me of what's different. Like I need you to pitch this to me as a new game. Cause right now it sure looks a lot like Splatoon 2.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I will be there and get Splatoon 3 and I will probably have a good time. It might be the kind of thing that I just do to like, you know, play some Splatfest, check out some new things, or like, am I actually going to get deep into it? I do like what they're doing with Salmon Run. I mean, Salmon Run might have been, as time wore on, Salmon Run might have been my favorite thing to play in Splatoon.
I agree. Yeah.
I would be down for getting back on the Salmon Run horse.
I want them to hook me with single player. I'd like them to put more effort into that.
I've been meaning to revisit Octo Expansion because I think that's something that like absence makes the heart go fonder, and the fact that like Splatoon's been dormant for like 2 years mm-hmm. and maybe I should just try Octo Expansion because maybe it'll be like a breath of fresh air. My memory of the Splatoon 2 single player is that like it was okay, but it was a little bit like more of the same.
It just feels like a series of challenge stages. Like there's no sense of place. There's no sense of like, yes, there are technically some voiceless cutscenes between where like you watch a text box for a while talking to each other. It feels like an afterthought to the multiplayer, which it is, but it just sort of feels like we kind of have the multiplayer figured out. Maybe could we do something with that single player? Because I think the potential is there to do something cool. And I just don't think they've delivered on it yet.
All right. Let's make it GoldenEye, but Splatoon.
There you go.
That's going to be what it is. That's what they've been waiting for, is that they're going to announce the single player in Splatoon as you like go in and you just play GoldenEye on Nintendo 64.
It's just gold. Yeah. All the graphics are the same except for your Inkling.
Yeah. Yeah. And you only see like their gun.
Yeah. I would take a Splatoon first person shooter.
Yeah. I'm surprised we have not seen robust Splatoon spinoffs yet.
Yeah. There have definitely been some mobile phone knockoffs. There was Ninjala, which wasn't actually like Splatoon, but was definitely in the same
I mean spinoffs like from Nintendo, not rip-offs.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, there's been a lot of people cheaping at the style. I remember the Disney Infinity mode that was like Splatoon. It was not good.
There was a what was that Crayola Scoot? Scoot
is the problem with Crayola Scoot is that it clearly had like zero budget. It's actually a pretty, it is not a Splatoon like. It's a Tony Hawk like. Honestly, it's not bad.
Oh, okay.
That was one that like abject curiosity I wound up playing, and like it's totally fine. And I get that it's the kind of thing where I get the sense that the people who made the game were like, this is what we want to do. And the publisher was like, yo, dude, we got $20.
Yeah. Yeah.
They certainly tried. Yeah. Anything else? I mean, I do think Metroid Prime in November. There's rumors of that Fire Emblem game. That it'd be cool if that came out this year. I don't think there's anything that rules it out, but unless that winds up being like a December game, that's probably next year. Advance Wars. When do you think Advance Wars comes out?
Never.
I think it will come out.
Like 2 months after whatever the successor to the Switch is. Advance Wars Reboot Camp is going to be the Samus Returns for Switch. It'll come out and then people will be like, oh, it didn't sell very well, so they're probably not going to do any more of that franchise.
I think that Advance Wars will come out in August.
That feels, yeah, it'd be the right game to just drop into that slot.
And I think it will come out with very little fanfare. I think that is definitely the kind of thing that I feel like press release one day is like Advance Wars coming out on like August 24th or whatever. And then it comes out.
Yep. It'll get a 5-minute overview trailer on YouTube. That'll probably be a repost of a trailer they've already posted.
Yeah. Or, you know, I mean, probably content that they already had prepared because that game got delayed less than a month before it was going to come out.
Yeah. Unless they're literally waiting to see what happens in Ukraine. Yeah. But like, I think you're going to be waiting for a bit.
Yeah. I don't think that really shows any signs of slowing down.
Yeah. And on that happy note.
Yeah. Let's wrap the show.
I think that's an episode. If you had any games for that Nintendo Direct that you were particularly excited for, send us an email, connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com, or hit us up on Twitter, ConnectivityNWR. Yeah, if you're listening to this somewhere where you can review it, that'd be a nice thing for you to do. Share it with a friend, all that good stuff. And we will see you next time.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye.
This was made possible by our generous supporters on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/NWR for all the details.